You just found the Mentoring Developers podcast. This is episode 74. You're going to love it. Or your money back.
Welcome to Mentoring Developers, the podcast for new and aspiring software developers, where we discuss your struggles, anxieties, and career choices. And now, here's your host, Arsalan Ahmed.
Hi, everyone. Welcome again to another episode of Mentoring Developers. Today, we have a very special panel discussion. This is not something that we do all the time, but we put together this panel of apprentices that went through an apprenticeship program by a company called Sparkbox. And at the end, they graduated and they became full-time software developers. So let's talk about their experiences from the point of view of the apprentices and from the point of view of the company that has this program. So welcome.
Thank you.
Hi.
All right. So we have Ryan and Yusuf and Corinne and Lauren. Okay. Let's introduce ourselves so people know who you are. Ryan, would you like to introduce yourself?
Sure. So my name's Ryan Cromwell. I've been in the software industry now for somewhere around 15 years or so. I've been here with Sparkbox for about six of those years as a technical director. Been lucky enough to be a part of the apprenticeship for all of those years. That's about it.
And I'm Yosef Kilonzo. I was an apprentice here at Sparkbox for a year, and I've been a developer here for about a year. So I was hired as a developer here. And before my apprenticeship, I was an ESL teacher. So I have a background in English, and teaching English as a second language.
I'm Corinne. I was also an apprentice with Sparkbox a year ago, and I've been a full-time dev for a year. I started off as an English major and discovered code and started teaching myself and eventually discovered the Sparkbox apprenticeship program.
I'm Lauren. I'm a former Sparkbox apprentice, and I was in the 2015 cohort, and now I'm living and working in Berlin at a product studio called Acolibrate.
Well, that's super nice, because not only that you guys have gone through the program, you've done it successfully. So I'm really happy that I was able to connect with you guys. And Ryan, I want to ask you, since you represent Sparkbox Management, I wanted to ask you, what made you guys think of starting an apprenticeship program? Why did you do it? Because I go around, I see a lot of companies, I talk to a lot of people. This isn't a standard practice. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah. So I think we're somewhere around the ninth or 10th iteration of our apprenticeship. It started off pretty informal. There was a gentleman from a school here, kind of an art design school called SAA at the time, School of Advertising Art at the time. And we brought him in. We pay all of our apprentices. So we paid him at the time. And he just kind of hung out with our development team. And we were pretty small. I want to say we were less than 10 at the time. And you know, we hoped for a little bit of osmosis, transfer of knowledge, just being around some developers would help. A lot of pairing, a lot of, working on activities and things along that line. And over the years, we've come to realize that was more of an experiment. We've come to learn over the years that there's really two, maybe three reasons that we continue to support the apprenticeship, because, it's something we invest in. We put a bunch of time into it to prepare for the apprenticeship. We now have two apprenticeships that we run throughout the year. We know it's important to pay our apprenticeship. So there's a lot of investment that goes there. And the reasons we like to do it, one is we want to, most importantly, be as much talent producers in this industry as we are kind of consumers. We say that a lot. What that means is we don't want to just be hiring great people. We want to make sure that the industry is flush with new talent as much as we can. And then one of the ways that we try to do that is by bringing folks in and pouring effort and time and learning as much as we can into these folks, and then sending them out into the industry and the community, hoping that, you know, it'll raise the boats of the entire web industry. That's probably the biggest. The second is when we look around at our team and those periods of time where we have our apprentices in here, we see a lot of growth. So selfishly, we know that our developers become better by being able to teach the topics that they think they already know, right? So whether it's HTML, CSS, SAS, JavaScript, development practices, you know, build pipelines, it doesn't really matter what the topic is. When they're explaining it and are trying to articulate it and get someone else who has never experienced these things to understand that same topic, we get better as well. We hone those skills that we have. So those are really the two biggest reasons we continue to invest in it. It seems to pay dividends for us. We'd like to think that we have a lot of successful apprentices now out there in the industry, like Lauren. You know, she's done some really awesome things. I love following her on Twitter and everything. And then we were lucky enough to hire some great ones as well. So we get it on both ends. You know, it's great.
Yeah, that's great. What do you guys think? Well, how was your experience let's ask Lauren. When you started doing the apprenticeship program, what were your expectations?
I was pretty much open to learning. I didn't have a ton of expectations, except that I knew that the team there at Sparkbox was willing and ready to help me learn and reach the next stage of my career development. So I kind of just jumped into it with an open mind, just making sure that I was ready and open and willing to learn. So I kind of went into it knowing a little bit about the program and like how it would be structured, but and willingness to learn and be taught. That's also a skill you have to have, as well as like being able to be taught.
Yeah, it's not easy for someone to get into a field that they're not familiar with. So it's great that a company, somebody decided, yeah, let's have some apprentices. But my question is, how do you even do that, right? It's not like a well-known model. At least I don't know any standard model of apprenticeships in the software industry. So Ryan, were you in the company when this program was started, or was it already there when you started?
So we already had an apprenticeship itself. Like I mentioned, the first one was pretty informal. It was just be alongside a bunch of other developers on our team. We had a second year of that that I was familiar with, but not a part of. That was right before I joined that one came to a close. And then all the other ones since then, I've either run or helped facilitate. And we've changed it throughout the years. Like we learn just as much from the apprentices as the apprentices, I think, learn. And sometimes I think we learn more. We've changed the model quite a few times. I mean, I don't know what your thoughts are, you know, Corinne and Yosef, mm-hmm. on how that apprenticeship has changed and like what it looks like even now versus maybe the last couple of years on how it works.
Yeah, I think so the year that we were apprentices, part of it was learning Ruby, mm-hmm. and then JavaScript. And I think now it's more focused on JavaScript. So it's interesting, like the curriculum changes, which I think is really cool. But mainly the main focus is like learning how to learn. I think that's what the foundation of the apprenticeship is on. So it does evolve, but that's always the foundation of it. Cause I think the industry is changing so much. That's such a valuable skill.
That's a very, very good comment that this has to evolve. Anything that you're doing in tech has to evolve because the technology is evolving and your needs are evolving, right? Right now people think that JavaScript frameworks and JavaScript as the platform is a thing. It didn't exist as a platform many years ago. So I think that's great that you guys are evolving. What I'm thinking about is if someone is listening to this right now or watching this on YouTube right now, and they're thinking, we can't do that. First of all, let's say there's a company, they are kind of thinking about it, but they never do it because it seems like they would have to not only pay people, not they will occupy space, they'll be taught, but then the resources that will be taken up by, for instance, someone has to teach you, someone has to be interrupted, their flow will be interrupted. And I know it's a very big thing in the industry. Don't break my flow, and people get really mad if you interrupt them. So it does look like you guys have a system where this is okay. This works somehow. That's why you're doing it year after year. So I wanted to know a little bit more from Ryan, how you manage that.
Yeah. You know, if somebody's listening and they're wondering some of those questions, I think the first thing they've got to do is decide if they're willing to commit those resources. Because if you're not willing to invest in it, it's not going to be valuable for you. It's not going to be valuable for the apprentices. That's not a good situation to get into. So you need to decide if you're really willing to invest in this. And it's going to take time. It's going to take money. And it's the dividends that you see come a little bit down the road. So I think you have to do that. For us, you know, we're starting now thinking about the 2020 apprenticeship, right? So it was end of August, early September when we decided, hey, it's time to start, you know, finding candidates. We invest in getting our apprenticeship out there, application out there. We have to find outlets for it, especially if you want to get outside the network that you have. So if, you know, we're in Dayton, it's not a huge area. It is one set of folks that we want to reach, but we want to reach a broad community that we're not in daily. So we have to take an active effort into getting into different communities that represent the industry itself. And that takes effort, right? So somebody has to focus on getting this out to a broad, diverse network of folks that can help spread the news and get folks in. That's step one. The next is like decide how you want to run it. Do you want to just have a curriculum? Are these self-taught folks? Are you just bringing them in and going to hand them materials and walk away? For us, we have a curriculum. It's published online. You can see it right alongside the application and what the content looks like. We are making updates, but that curriculum's out there. Some of the other things that, you know, we know we need to do is we need to find ways to carve out time from our team. We don't, other than a few folks, we don't dedicate a ton of time out of everybody's schedule. So the whole team isn't sitting there carving out a specific amount of time necessarily, but we do things like encourage office hours. So we have a shared calendar for all of our apprentices that they can go in and look and who's available during what times to pair on things along that line. We encourage them to reach out and jump into Slack and things along that line. We create a schedule, right? We're creating a schedule right now for what the first 6 months of our next apprenticeship from January through July looks like. So folks will be able to see what the content is that's being focused on. They can jump in. We can pull people in just to, you know, teach different topics or pair on different topics, things like that. So we do put a lot of time into it. I just said August through December, we're going to be planning for the apprenticeship that starts in January, ends in July. That's 12 months worth of work for an apprenticeship that lasts 6 months. You have to decide if this is important to you and invest in it, both in finding folks to come in, but also to run the apprenticeship. We believe it's valuable. We've spent some time to look at how this increases our team and improves our team, and we believe it's worth it. I think everybody else needs to do the same. So I'm kind of curious, Joseph, you've now been a part of our apprenticeship and kind of watched our front end design apprenticeship go through. What do you, when you look at the curriculum and that way that content is presented and how we work through it, like what are your impressions?
I have seen there have been just in a year since I was an apprentice, developer apprentice, there have been, you know, pretty big changes to the curriculum, and I think for the better. And I think that's just kind of an evidence of the mindset that is a healthy mindset to have for apprenticeships and just for developers, because I feel the same thing where it's kind of a learning driven and learning oriented, always wanting to improve that mindset, and that's evident in the curriculum. So the front end portion of the developer apprenticeship, that in particular, it's very well organized to focus on the specific skills, but to do so in kind of digestible ways where you have real projects or that you can that you can work on to practice those skills. And so it's, so I think a valuable thing that I've seen in the curriculum is how you, these skills are broken down, but also how they're taught in a way that you get to apply them in. So if it's front end, there's a focus on for a week or two of like the HTML, where that's the sole focus, and you might have a small project that you would do with that. And then you would go into like maybe a layout section that is part of the CSS, and then maybe a SAS section, and using like BEM, which is a naming convention for CSS. So those might all be discrete weeks. And I think for me, coming in as an apprentice and not familiar with a lot of these practices, I think it was really good to kind of, you know, learn from to learn in the best way from people who are experienced with using these things in real projects and solving real problems and seeing what that looks like. So I guess that's something that made the biggest impression on me, and kind of the systematic way of breaking down the complex technologies that we use and then kind of learning them in digestible ways. So
I think that's a good way of explaining it. Thing is that we have to have this idea of empathy in our industry, which is not always there, let's be honest. So what happens is you have a problem, and if we work together, it's not my problem, it's your problem. And that attitude creates a problem where I don't want to give my time freely. And I've seen it happen. It happens in certain corporate environments where you really don't want to share. If you can't share, if you can't share your time, can't share your knowledge, well, you're not going to have an apprenticeship or any kind of program to help junior people. So I think that's pretty good. We've come to the end of our first segment. We wanted to dig a little bit into why Sparkbox has this program and what's the importance of it. So now we'll be back with another segment where we'll get into how was your experience running it. Okay, right after this.
If you are a new or aspiring software or web developer, I highly recommend you listen to the Mentoring Developers podcast. I've listened to most of the episodes, and I was fortunate enough to find it, to discover it early on in my education. I was looking for a podcast, something audio only, that I could listen to while I was exercising each morning, and all of the other podcasts that I found were far too technical and frankly, just over my head. I didn't understand what they were talking about, and it was just very discouraging. So when I found the Mentoring Developers podcast, I felt a lot better. It made me feel a lot more confident, a lot more comfortable, because the Mentoring Developers podcast is speaking to people like me who are new, very new to software and web development, and trying to make their way and trying to understand all the different technologies and tools and words that are unfamiliar. So it's a terrific, terrific resource for anyone who is just getting into this field. And also the host, Arsalan, is providing a service which, as far as I can tell, does not exist. His podcast is one of a kind, and he has done a terrific job with it, and I'm very appreciative of the podcast. It's a service to the community. So I highly recommend you take some time and enjoy and learn from the Mentoring Developers podcast.
Hi, everyone. Welcome again to another segment when we are talking to Sparkbox. We're talking to Karin, we're talking to Yusuf and Lauren, as well as Ryan from Sparkbox. And we are discussing apprenticeships. Okay, Karin, I'd like to know what your experience was like when you wanted to, well, first, how did you hear about this? And how did you decide this is something you wanted to do?
Yeah, definitely. So I first heard about it at a local meetup. When I moved here, I wanted to get more involved in like the web developer community, because that was one of my goals, to kind of level up after working on WordPress sites and not really knowing where to go and what to learn and how to do that. So I was able to meet some people from Sparkbox, and they told me about the apprenticeship, and I was able to look more into that. And after that, there's an application online So we have our applications at apprentices.csparkbox.com.
Mm-hmm.
So anyone can go there, see information about like our full stack apprenticeship or our front end design apprenticeship. But basically went through that application process and here I am, I guess.
Now, did we, when you were joining, did we do the in-person questions or the video?
Yeah. We did the video.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
There was a video and then there was also like a call. Yeah.
Yeah. That might actually have been different than when you did it, Lauren. Did you do a video? I don't think you did a video, did you?
We did do video at one point, I think.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, definitely not in person because I was living in Chicago at the time.
Right, right.
Okay, so what are you looking for, Ryan, when you're talking to people? I'm assuming you get a lot of applications.
Yeah, actually, that was kind of what I was alluding to is at some point in the years, I can't remember, it was probably 3 or 4 years ago, I thought it was more recent, but we actually got somewhere around 100 to 150 applications 1 year for the apprenticeship, and the system broke down effectively. By system, I mean us finding people that would work for their apprenticeship and us talking to them. Because traditionally what we have done is we get these applications in for our apprenticeship and I and somebody else would have a quick call, 15, 20, 30 minutes, just to see what's going on. And from there, we kind of start to figure out who was going to be a great fit. And that broke down. So we started doing this video idea instead. It helped. So with regards to what we're looking for, who we're looking for, and what works well for our apprenticeship. So, I think we're pretty clear with ourselves and with apprentices that we're not actually very good at taking folks on who are brand new to the industry. So if you have an ambition to code, but you've not really had any introduction to the idea of coding, we're not the right place. We're just not good at that. We aren't a boot camp necessarily. We aren't going to be kind of a greenfield training course or anything like that. It's just for whatever reason, our curriculum and the way we do things, it doesn't work very well. So we are looking for somebody who's kind of got a little bit of background already. Maybe they're working into the industry. They don't have to be. But they're kind of out there exploring the industry, kind of like what Corinne was mentioning. I know, Yosef, you were doing similar, and Lauren, I know you were exploring it as well. That's a big part of it. It kind of sets a baseline for what's going to work. Sparkbox as a whole has three principles based around empathy, humility, and fluency. Those first two have nothing to do with code. And so we still look for empathy and humility in our apprentices. And the reason we do that is we know they're going to be working together. We know they're going to go into the industry. And we know that those two skills are going to be essential to being successful in the industry. Working on teams, working with clients, those all require, empathy and humility to do it well, to build for the web well. So those are still important. For a long time, our apprenticeship has been a balance between maybe 50-50, it might not even be quite this, between self-led and instructor-led. So what that means is, we'll sometimes have classroom style days, but we'll also have periods of a day or two where our apprentices are kind of learning on their own with materials that we've provided. Maybe it's a problem or a project or something like that. So we look for somebody who's driven, right? And that's important for us. So those are some of the bigger ones. I'd love to hear from maybe Lauren, what you, looking back on the apprenticeship, what were some of the traits that you, or maybe even prep that you did or had coming in that you feel like helped make you successful? Because you came out of that apprenticeship, you were doing great stuff and you've done great stuff since. So something's worked.
So I think I attribute a lot of it to own side projects, kind of realizing okay, I'm not an expert, but here are the things I've built. It doesn't have to be perfect. Letting go of the idea that things need to be perfect, and kind of just being willing and open to learning. And I was also pretty passionate about it.
I was really like going all in, giving it my all. And I think that's something that maybe you all picked up on. And I think that is like a great skill and a great, like it's just something good to have. But yeah, I think tinkering around with things and like the curiosity bit is quite important.
So let me ask you guys this. Do you have to be a people person to be an apprentice? I mean, you're a little shy.
Well, I guess, you know, it depends to me. What does that mean? What's your mm-hmm. definition of that? If you mean that just somebody who is always very, you know, outgoing and social, I don't think you have to be. You can, there's people with many different personalities. And I think the main thing, especially working on a team and something that, you know, I've really admired and as a value at Sparkbox is valuing different people who have different personalities and working with them to develop the same skills that are used on client projects and to be able to communicate and empathize with the people you're working with on a team. So I think that if what you mean by a people person is a certain, you know, outgoing nature, I think that it's not a requirement. I don't know. What do you think, Ryan?
I think you need to be willing to work with people. And like I said, empathy and humility, mm-hmm. like if you can bring those things to the table, I don't know that it matters too much what stage of your career you're at. You know, you're going to be able to work with folks to learn, to teach, things like that, especially if you're going to be collaborating, right? Like, you know, to have an empathy for, you know, what people know already, where they're coming from in their career, you know, what they care about, you know, in software and things like that. And then a level of humbleness and humility to, even as somebody who's supposed to be in this experience as a teacher, to know that these apprentices who are coming up are going to give stuff back, right? Like you need to be open as a teacher to learn back. And if you can do that, the conversation changes completely, right? The experience changes completely. So I think that's, you know, I think that's why those two traits are so important to us, is it makes a lot of who we are as a company and as a team, both, you know, during our work and, you know, also as apprentices and apprentice teachers, I guess, if you will, or whatever you want to call it.
The apprenticizers.
There you go.
The mentors. I think so. The key word here is empathy. And empathy is a very big part of this platform, mentoring developers. It's going to be all over the place because the reason is that this is what we need. This is kind of lacking. If you really go out and you work in a different place, a few different places, you'll realize that it's not really the norm. And if you're empathetic, if you can actually put yourself in another person's position, you'll be able to tutor somebody or mentor somebody. You'd be able to actually be a good client if you're hiring a tech company, or you could be a good consultant if you are working with a client. And it works in every way, right? If you're a CEO, it helps you to be a good CEO. And if you're a developer, it helps you be a good developer, and so on. And it has no downsides, but it's something that we have to develop. It's sometimes it's not natural. So we have to develop it. And I think the culture that you guys have at Sparkbox, I'm sure that it's helping you sort of hone that sense of empathy. Would you agree with that?
I'll actually add a little, like, I think our apprenticeship helps to hone that, right? Like by having, you know, if we were to just hire all the best talent in Dayton, right? Like that doesn't, I don't think that really puts us in a position to hone things like our empathy and our humility and stuff like that. And our ability to teach and our craft and things like that. By bringing in folks to our apprenticeship, by pouring into them, by being open to learning from them, you know, those things remind us what this industry is all about, where it's going in the future. You know, the folks that are out there bringing new ideas into this industry, I think it's part of the process. It's not the end state, right? The apprenticeship is not something that starts on January, we did all the work, or ends in July and we did all the work. It's a part of the process of us growing as a company and the industry growing. That's why we're trying to produce as much talent and things like that as possible. It's because we want to be a part of the process.
So Yusuf, you were an apprentice and you went through the whole apprenticeship program, you graduated, then you are now working at the same company as an employee. Now other apprentices are coming in. So that's right. I can see potentially lots of areas of conflict when during your apprenticeship, you're trying to do your job as an apprentice. And then there are other people who are trying to do their job, their billable work or something that they're supposed to do. And then they have to also turn around and help you. It could be, I can imagine some kind of conflicts and some tension can happen. And it's normal. It's nothing bad. It just happens and you just have to deal with it somehow. So if you have any opinions on how you handle it personally or you saw other people handle it, I'd like to know that.
So I think that the biggest thing that I can say about this is that we're a team. And that means that, you know, when there are the type of conflicts that you are talking about, when there, you know, somebody might not have time to do something or it doesn't work with their their current workload, that there's always someone that is there to someone else who is there to step in and help. And there's always kind of a line that you can reach out to. And Ryan mentioned earlier the office hours that members of the team have that they put on their calendar. So that type of conflict you're referring to, that was never an issue for me as an apprentice. In addition to the scheduled sessions and things that members of the team have prioritized and committed to, there is also additional lines of communication. You know, we have our shared Slack where we can drop questions and people are always willing to pair. And then there's the office hours I mentioned. So that type of conflict, I think it has been resolved or avoided by the team mindset and having, you know, people who are always willing.
So I wanted to know from you the state of the industry, which is how are other companies doing it? Because you have more experience. Do you know any other company who's doing something, anything even remotely similar to yours?
Yeah. Are you asking me?
I am.
Oh, okay. Sorry. Yeah, there's actually quite a few of them out there that are doing it, which is pretty cool. In fact, was it any of our cohort?
Yeah, the apprentice.at. Yeah.
Yeah. So we have a project with all of our apprenticeships kind of towards the end. Mm-hmm. And 1 year, it must have been, was it your year?
No,
it was my year, actually.
Oh, that's what I was gonna ask. You want to describe it?
We've been basically like a list of apprenticeships that are available. It's not every apprenticeship that's out there, but we have a pretty nice list of apprenticeships that are offered at apprentice.at, which is, it reads as apprentice at. So it lists companies that you can find apprenticeship at. It ranges from web development to UX to mobile. There's tons of other companies. Thoughtbot is one. Eighth Light is another. There's quite a few that are doing it. And I'm sure Ryan probably knows a lot more now. I don't know if how current it is, but could you maybe talk about how keep up to date with those things and how it's been managed since we left?
Yeah, it's it ebbs and flows. It takes time. So, you know, one way it keeps up to date is about every year we go through it and contact folks. Honestly, the easiest way is just to click through their application link, which is on the site. And if it's not there anymore, we know we've got to do some digging. The other way is, you know, when folks reach out to us and say, hey, we'd like to be on there, it's got a decent enough following. It shows up somewhere in the top Google page or something like that when you search for apprenticeships, at least in the software industry. I've been pretty lucky. I've had a number of folks reach out and ask like, hey, how do you do this? Can we talk to you about it? Because they want to create it. I'm always happy to jump on a call like a Zoom like this and talk about how we can make it happen. Because I want to see more of them. I think there's enough folks out there who want to be a part of it, and there's plenty of work to be done, that we can use some more folks in the industry, that I'm happy to help folks understand how we run it and shape their own. And also the nice thing is I, from a lot of those apprenticeships that get mentioned on apprentice.at and those conversations, it helps shape our apprenticeship. So traditionally, one example is these projects. Just the apprenticeship as a whole, we've had a pretty good, pretty consistent mantra that we want to remove the pressure of project work from our apprenticeship so that 6 months people are not working on client work. It's not billable, because we don't want that secondary pressure to deliver in timelines and on budget and things like that. We want this to be an opportunity, a space to learn. We've over the last couple of years had some projects that are they're not client facing for us since we're client services, but they are more, real projects in that they have a deadline for us. And that's where Kryn did that 2 years ago as a part of her apprenticeship, which you built.
Yeah, we built the accessibility audit site.
Right.
And it was an internal project, and we had a deadline. And I was working with two of our full-time Sparkboxers.
Right.
And this was during the apprenticeship. So it was really cool to be able to have that feeling of daily stand-ups, weekly demos, making pull requests, getting code reviews, that collaboration. I felt like I remember talking with you towards the end of the apprenticeship of, even if I didn't get hired at Sparkbox, I felt like I could go and be a part of a team.
Yeah.
Which was really what I wanted to get out of that, which was awesome.
Yeah. So let me ask you guys, what do you think is the difference between an apprenticeship and an internship? I have an idea on that, but sometimes it sounds similar, but there is a difference. What do you think?
Lauren, you have any thoughts?
An apprenticeship feels more like learning from master interns. Sometimes they're unpaid, which I think is totally unfair and unjust. I think the apprenticeships have a really clear model and outline of exactly what it is you should be doing and what you're learning. For example, the Sparkbox curriculum that exists with apprenticeships, it's a bit different. There's not really any sort of guide or outline of what it is like you should be learning. There's no end goal, I feel like, with apprenticeships. I keep going back with the word, sorry.
Yeah, so I see your point. You're saying that apprenticeships are more structured, they have a curriculum, they have an end state, you'll do it for X number of months, and then at the end you will know 1, 2, 3, 5, 6, this list of things. It's more so it sounds a little bit like a code school, but it's not really. Sometimes it sounds like an internship, but it's not really. And I think the way I see it is that internships are really for people in college that are maybe in their summer break or some other time where they're actually students, and then probably they get some school credit for that. An apprenticeship is not really necessarily for people who are in college.
Yeah.
It's for anybody who wants to learn, and it could be an older person. So Ryan, I was curious, you think someone who has already a job, a career already, maybe they've been working for 5 years, they're not happy. They're like, I wish I could do this code thing, but I can't be an intern because I'm too old for this. Could they apply for an apprenticeship?
Oh, they do. So we've had quite a few people who have already been in the software industry who've applied. Casey is one of one that comes to mind. She's an awesome developer as a part of our team now, and she's done some great work. Kryn mentioned that she was doing web development on WordPress type sites. She was looking to kind of take the next step in her career. I absolutely think at least our apprenticeship is totally ripe for folks coming in that want to take the next step in their career. We've had lots of folks come in that are that are very capable and probably would have been successful on their own in some way, and could have been, you know, continued a career. Our goal is to kind of, to look for folks who we think through our work and our efforts and pouring into them, they can kind of jump to the next level. That's our hope, is to take them kind of that next level that they might not have reached, right?
Can I comment on that?
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't interrupt, but yeah. So what you're saying about getting to the next level. So I think that, like, when your earlier question about internships and apprenticeships, and what really models like an apprenticeship to me is the skills that you can only really learn, or at least the fundamental skills that you can learn in the best way, is by working with someone who is using the skills that you want to learn to solve problems, and working with them. And you can only really do that and get that transfer of knowledge in that way with an apprenticeship. So I think that's a key aspect of what makes an apprenticeship for me, working directly with, you know, people who are experienced.
So. Yeah, much more eloquent.
Yeah. So my question now, I'm thinking of this person, of who is a senior person who's not necessarily management and is not junior. And I'm talking from experience. I know many people like that. So they're like, oh, these interns or these apprentices or these, you know, people, they're going to come and they're going to bother me. They're going to ask me questions. Or sometimes they might think that, you know, we did it the hard way and this, they have it easy. They're coming in and we're teaching them, you know, it happened. I went to college for 4 years or 6 years or whatever. And they're just, you know, what are the English majors when you're, it happens. It's normal. It's normal to have feelings like that. And so I know that at Sparkbox, you have a smaller company, you're very intimate, and I can understand that you work really well together. But if you can just put yourself in place of, you know, someone who's working at a large company with people who've been working for 30 years and other people who have, you know, there, some people have biases, some people have other opinions. How could we create a situation where this apprenticeship model could be applied to almost any company? Is there anything that you think, hey, if you do this and this, you'd be able to reduce the level of friction and make it easy to implement it? Anything. I'm sorry to put you on the spot.
Sorry.
You're
go for it.
No, I was just going to briefly just, I think it comes down to your values. That's the starting point. You have to value those things that you described. So for example, the humility and intellectual humility, you know, the skills that you need to work with someone of different skill levels, you need to have a certain amount of empathy for that. And yeah, so I think values is what it comes down to. And if you have those values, then you can implement a system around those. So that's
I think everyone in this industry, we all started in the same place. None of us were born knowing how to code. And so I think keeping that in mind is really helpful. Like, mm-hmm. we've all been in that place, and having that empathy, being willing to like set aside time to work with apprentices or interns, whatever you call them, mm-hmm. Depending on where you're at. But yeah, I think that empathy is really key.
Awesome. All right, I think this will do it for this segment. We wanted to talk about conflicts and how you handle them. And so just start this idea in someone's mind, like, yeah, I can do this too. Someone who is maybe looking for an apprenticeship would be like, yes, maybe I should do it. And someone who is kind of on the fence about starting a program, they'll be like, yes, maybe I should consider it, because there are benefits. Not only that's benefit that you generate goodwill among people, and they, you know, people talk about like, hey, they have this apprenticeship program. And if you have an apprenticeship program, clearly you have some empathy going on in your company, right? Some people are caring. And so that's a good place to work. That's for the first feeling. And secondly, you'll get this pool of talent that's exclusive to you. You can train them in a certain way. And Ryan and his team, they would be able to teach you some of the values, some of the techniques, some of the technologies in the way that they do it, and that's going to be really valuable for them. Because for someone like me, you know, I have all these years of experience doing things my way. I come in, you know, I may have to sort of backtrack a little bit. But someone who's fresh, his mind is fresh, and you'd be able to sculpt their thinking a little bit. And that's good. A company like Sparkbox, I think, what I like about you guys is that, first of all, you do top quality work, but then you're able to take someone who is raw and then sort of carve, you know, something valuable. So after a few years of working at Sparkbox, you can imagine you could go anywhere. You can start your own thing, or you could go anywhere if you wanted to move on. This is power, and I've seen this happen again and again. And then I see the other people who work for a number of years in other places, and they stagnate. And because it's not their fault necessarily, it's just the situation they're in. The companies are not generally set up. So I'm very happy that you guys are doing that. So let's end this segment right here. If we have time, we'll do another one. Otherwise, I'll see you guys soon, okay?